Beloved ones of God, let every moment of life whisper thy name to my ears. Vumela lonki kresha, lobomi lichlibezela, igamalako, esentli benizam. Mach elke oomblik van die lewe, u naam in my ore fluister. That's from the Vadam, a scripture given to us by Inyat Khan. Regulars at the temple will know the words love,
harmony,
and beauty. But where does rhythm fit in? It actually comes up a lot. Of course, Inyat Khan was a musician and was also heavily rooted in his Hindu context, where rhythm is very central in canonical scripture, as we just heard. One of the things he wrote or said about rhythm is the following, particularly applicable to our westernized late capitalist lives. Our active life gives little time for concentration and for putting mind and body into the condition in which one can experience the rhythm that gives inspiration and meets with the will of God. Yet, it is in this rhythm alone that the will of God can be done. The daily reality for most of us is more like what we heard in the Buddhist scripture. Like a fish that is pulled out of the water and thrown on the dry ground, threshes about and quivers, the mind threshes about from thought to thought. We feel discombobulated, we feel rattled, we feel flustered, frazzled, out of sync. Inyat Khan again. The work that a Sufi considers to be their sacred task has nothing to do with any particular creed, nor has it to do with any particular religion. It is only this simple thing, to be in rhythm with life's conditions and to be in tune with the infinite. Simple, right? But how? There are two important things to remember. One is to develop a sense of harmony in one's everyday life, and the other to develop the sense of rhythm in everything one does. Still a bit vague. And why would one even want to do this? If you think of life or creation as a symphony, by finding the rhythm, and importantly, playing our part, we can get to know the composer. Now let us look at the different ways in which rhythm manifests in our lives. First, there's musical rhythm, literal rhythm. We hear it in the music played today in the service, which is maybe a bit longer than some of us are used to. Also, of course, in African religion, rhythm and drums in particular play an important role. To quote Zulu mystic Credo Mutwa, drums can be sounded in such a way that they have a soothing effect, that they can create a restful feeling. The beat of the drum can cure what no medicines can cure. It can heal the ills of the mind. It can heal the very soul. In our Sufi tradition, too, rhythm and music are very important. We have the zikr, which is an incantation of God's name. There's qawwali music, which is traditionally played at the graves of the saints. And both of these forms of music or rhythm came to Cape Town in 1694, when Sheikh Yusuf of Makassar arrived here. Description from a Swedish traveler about a century later, observing one of these Sufi ceremonies here in Cape Town. The women were neatly dressed, and the men wore nightgowns of silk or cotton. Incense was burned. The men sat cross-legged on the floor, dispersed all over the room. About 8 in the evening, the service commenced, at which point they began to sing, loud and soft alternately, sometimes the priests alone, at other times the whole congregation. After this, a priest read out of the great book that lay on the cushion before the altar, the congregation at times reading aloud after him. This is from a wonderful little biography of Sheikh Yusuf. So music was also important to Inyat Khan. He was a musician. He also grew up in a household of musicians. And he was initiated in the Chisti lineage, which is a Sufi lineage that has a closer connection to music than most. In addition to musical rhythm, there's the human rhythm, the restful feeling that Credo Mutua mentioned. In Inyat Khan's words, when the body is restful, comfortable, relaxed, we're able to think. Inspirations and revelations come. We feel quiet and we have enthusiasm and power. You can think of the contemporary craze of mindfulness or flow in athletics. Of course, these get emptied of meaning one Instagram post at a time. But they're ancient ideas that we find in all of the world scriptures. Should you wish to revisit the scriptures that were read today, there'll be a handout on your way out where you can read them and find the citation of the source. In the Hindu scripture, O mighty armed Arjun, the material energy consists of three rhythms, sattva, or goodness, rajas, or passion, and tamas, or ignorance. These rhythms bind the eternal soul to the perishable body. It's quite a thing for the eternal soul to be bound to the perishable body by rhythm. They're called the gunas, and if you take one thing today and forget everything else, take these with you and look them up and start to recognize them in your own life. Inyat Khan invokes them very often. Sometimes he names them, sometimes he implies them. Possibly because he grew up in a Muslim household but went to a Hindu school as a child, the scripture left a particularly strong mark. One example of a passage in which he mentions it. From the metaphysical point of view, there are different rhythms describing the condition of man. They are spoken of in the Vedanta as sattva, rajas, and tamas. Sattva is a harmonious rhythm. Rajas is a rhythm which is not in perfect harmony with nature. And tamas is a rhythm which is chaotic by nature and destructive. Every impulse that comes to man while he's in this chaotic rhythm is followed by destructive results. Any impulse coming when he's in the rhythm of rajas is accomplished, but the impulse that comes when he's in the rhythm of sattva is inspired and in harmony with the rhythm of the universe. To put a contemporary spin on it, tamas is a day spent watching Netflix and eating KFC. Rajas is maybe a long hike at Silvermine and a dinner at a fancy restaurant. And sattva is going to a religious ceremony such as this, maybe volunteering somewhere and having a pasta pesto or chickpea curry without too much spice. Rhythm was so important to Inyat Khan that when he was asked what London was like, he reported in astonishment that he saw a rich man run to catch a tram. It was so strange to Murshid that you would break your own rhythm just to get somewhere on time. And of course, this phrase acknowledges that sometimes life circumstances justify breaking the rhythm. He didn't complain about a poor man running to catch a tram to make it to their job in time. So again, what might this look like today? Maybe somebody being fortunate enough to own a car, yet getting stressed in traffic. Or a middle-class woman interrupting a deep conversation with her best friend because she received a notification on her phone. And then there's our urban culture's obsession with takeaway coffee. Perhaps if you can afford to pay 40 rand for a cup of coffee, you can afford to take 5 minutes to sit down and drink it from a ceramic cup. The story of an American priest driving Desmond Tutu to the White House in 2007 to meet George Bush. The traffic was bad, and I was feeling responsible to find a way to get him through it. He seemed not to be noticing much of anything because he was working on his speech. But without looking up, sensing, I suspect, my anxiety, he patted my hand and said, "Father, count to 10 slowly. Breathe. God will get us where we need to be, when we need to be there. Now here, you might object. The world's a mess. Doesn't it require rajas or action rather than sattva or contemplation? Thomas Merton, who's a Catholic American mystic and peace activist, wrote the following at a time of opposition to the Vietnam War. The rush and pressure of modern life are a form, perhaps the most common form, of its innate violence. To allow oneself to be carried away by a multitude of conflicting concerns, to surrender to too many demands, to commit oneself to too many projects, to want to help everyone and everything, is to succumb to violence. The frenzy of our activism neutralizes our work for peace. Which echoes Murshid's words earlier, balance is the keynote of spiritual attainment. Also the Jewish scripture, everything has an appointed season, and there is a time for every matter under the heaven. A time to give birth and a time to die, a time to plant and a time to uproot that which is planted, a time to weep and a time to laugh, a time of wailing and a time of dancing. Which brings us to the third manifestation of rhythm, the rhythm of creation. The moon, the harvests, day and night, seasons, ebb, flood, our own process of aging. In the Zoroastrian scripture, they stress this rhythm of creation greatly. I desire to approach the monthly festivals, the lords of the ritual order, and the new moon and the waning moon, and the full moon which scatters night, and the yearly festivals and seasons. Or in the scripture of Islam, the Quran in this case, translation by Maulana Wahiduddin, also a peace activist like Merton, and actually buried in a graveyard not far from Murshid's Dargah in Delhi. In the creation of the heavens and the earth, in the alternation of night and day, in the ships that sail the ocean bearing cargoes beneficial to man, in the water which God sends down from the sky and with which he revives the earth after its death, scattering over it all kinds of animals. If you listen to that, we're being invited to start seeing the symphony of creation and start getting a sense of the rhythm that underpins all of the previous types of rhythm, namely the divine rhythm. Another story of Murshid in London. I was talking to one of his students, walking on a busy street, possibly Regent Street or something like that, and all of a sudden Murshid swerved and walked into traffic, much to the consternation of his student. And of course, Murshid was so in touch with the rhythm of creation on that day that he walked gently between all the rushing vehicles and no accident happened at all. Many of you will have seen The Matrix, and there's that moment where Neo all of a sudden sees the green numbers running down and sees the underpinning rhythm to the world that he had believed to be reality up to that point. In your trans words again, life demands a certain standard of understanding, of thinking, of living that can be learned by putting oneself to that tune and setting oneself to that particular rhythm which makes the music of life. It is in this manner that happiness is attained, which is the seeking of every soul. In the Christian scripture, the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, forbearance, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness and self-control. Since we live by the Spirit, let us keep in step with the Spirit. Keep in step. The work that a Sufi considers to be their sacred task is only this simple thing, to be in rhythm with life's conditions and to be in tune with the infinite by meeting it and observing it keenly and then by trying to harmonize himself. It is then that God will get us where we need to be, when we need to be there. In closing, another tutu story, this time from his time spent in India with the Dalai Lama. They waved their arms above their heads together as the Archbishop got up to dance his irrepressible elbow-waving boogie. He encouraged the Dalai Lama to get up and dance too. As a Tibetan Buddhist monk, the Dalai Lama's vows prohibit dancing. But today he got up to dance for the first time in his life. He started to sway and rock his hands back and forth. At first, as uncomfortable as a middle school boy on the dance floor, the Dalai Lama started to smile and laugh as the Archbishop encouraged him. They took each other's hands and moved to the music, celebrating the true joy of friendship, the true joy of our unbreakable connection to one another, the true joy of the world coming together as one. A time to weep and a time to laugh, a time of wailing and a time of dancing. Let every moment of life whisper thy name to my ears. Thank you.